This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Berkeley Life Nitric Oxide Support Supplements. Nitric oxide is a vital signaling molecule in cardiovascular health. We all make nitric oxide in our bodies, but as we age, it starts to diminish naturally. Being proactive in maintaining nitric oxide levels is vital for healthful aging because an underperforming cardiovascular system will limit the effectiveness of any other supplementation in your regimen. Just two capsules of Berkeley Life Daily provides the dietary nitrate equivalent of 7 ounces of beets and can support energy levels, maintain healthy blood pressure levels, and improve general circulation. It's the professional-grade nitric oxide supplement that I recommend and prescribe for my patients. This is only available from healthcare providers. To get your Berkeley Life professional supplements, just go to drhoffman.com/BerkeleyLife. That's drhoffman.com/BerkeleyLife. You can also get Berkeley Life's patented nitric oxide test strips to conveniently test your own nitric oxide levels safely and easily at home. That's drhoffman.com/BerkeleyLife for Berkeley Life nitric oxide supplements. Welcome back to our weekly Q&A with Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's an opportunity for you to pose your questions to us. Radioprogram@AOL.com is our destination for questions. With me today, Layla Mutin. She's our nutritionist in residence. And we're answering your questions. Now, a lot of questions have come to us about coronavirus. As part of easing the lockdown, we're opening it up to questions of all kinds. You know, guess what? You know, it's been several weeks, but our ordinary maladies haven't gone away, even though we've been preoccupied.
No.
I'll tell you what's interesting. You know,
life goes on.
Life goes on, but there's an interesting statistic out of England. I don't know if it's really going to be borne out. But while everybody's been fixated on coronavirus, they've looked at the number of heart attacks that have occurred during this comparable period, you know, compared year to year. And they found that the number of heart attacks in England has gone down significantly during this period. Now, what that may be due to the fact that some people are, I mean, worst case scenario, some people are experiencing, you know, heart attacks at home and are not showing up for medical treatment.
That's true.
You know, and that we're maybe missing some of these mild heart attacks. You know, obviously, a heart attack is a very serious thing, but, you know, sometimes people just say, oh, my God, you know, I'm having a bad case of heartburn, and I don't want to end up in a hospital or an emergency room, so I'll just tough it out. However, it is possible that by the mere fact that people aren't forced to go to work with long commutes, you know, setting that alarm clock for 4:30 in the morning to, you know, have a hasty breakfast and jump in a car and commute for 2 hours in traffic and then, you know, battle, you know, the congested, you know, streets and then subject to the stress of work. You know, they're staying home. A lot of people exercising more, maybe eating better because all the restaurants are closed. And I mean, we hope they're eating better. Some of them people are obviously eating worse. Nancy Pelosi has her, you know, freezer full of all kinds of gourmet ice cream. So, you know, it's some people may be, putting on some coronavirus pounds, but, also people are sleeping more, you know, it's like, what else is there to do? Right.
Right.
So people are sleeping.
Time for the mid-afternoon nap.
Yeah. So I don't know, maybe there's a salutary effect on cardiovascular disease. I'm just throwing that out there. All right. So the question that we were going to talk about was about a condition called pneumatosis coli, right?
Right.
What's
D
the question?
Writes. Yeah, D writes, I wonder if you have information on pneumatosis coli and how to heal this condition. No one has any information, so I thought I'd ask you, Dr. Hoffman.
Well, it's a rare condition. First of all, and it's actually a radiologic diagnosis, which means
something they see on an X-ray.
Exactly. It's not like, I think I've got pneumatosis coli. I'm not feeling so well today. No, it's not. It's got to be diagnosed based on a CT scan or an MRI. And I'm reading from a description of this because, you know, they told us in medical school, you don't have to memorize everything, but you have to be able to look up everything. And I'm good at looking stuff up. I'm really good at looking stuff up. So they say that the pathogenesis of pneumatosis intestinalis, that's another word for pneumatosis coli, is poorly understood and likely multifactorial. It is in itself not a disease, but a clinical sign. It's a sign of something else, and it can portend a life-threatening intra-abdominal condition. It means that air got out of your intestine and into the wall, actually into the wall of your intestine.
And it got trapped there.
Yeah, and so I guess that could happen as a sign of colon cancer. It could happen as a result of diverticulitis or diverticulosis, I guess.
Okay.
I don't know what the circumstances are of this question. You know, it's got to be in the context, some kind of clinical context. It's got to be in the context of, okay, well, we found this, and is it an incidental finding of no meaning at all, or is it related to an underlying condition? So is the patient in pain? Is the patient, have abnormal blood tests? Is the patient suffering from an infection? We don't know from this question. It's an isolated finding. And so, it's kind of like, I feel like the radiologist, I see it. Okay, well, fine. I'll just note it on the chart and send the patient home and tell the patient to look it up on Google. No, it would require follow-up because it is a potential sign of a life-threatening intra-abdominal condition. Or maybe not. Maybe not.
Okay.
It's like finding air where air doesn't belong. And by the way, it can also be sometimes a sign of a bad kind of parasitic infection, I think.
Wow.
So there's what's called, so this is the concept of differential diagnosis. When you have a finding in medicine, this is classic medical training, this is what they taught us as medical students, is that when you have a finding or a symptom or a blood test, abnormality, you have a differential diagnosis. You list all the possible things that it could be, from the most likely to the least likely, and then you winnow your way down that differential diagnosis, and that's what's called the rule-out game. So you, in this case, you might rule out colon cancer, you might rule out diverticulitis, and as you rule out, and you get to the bottom, and you ruled everything out, it's like, it's an incidental finding. We can't figure out why it is. Not to worry.
Okay. Hopefully that is the case for D.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wish I could say more.
Yeah. No, understandably, Dr. Hoffman. We have a question from Jean. I suffer from an autoimmune disease, myasthenia gravis.
Mm-hmm.
What precautions should I be taking during this pandemic? I often feel short of breath. My neurologist seems to think I'm fine and should be taking Mestinon,
right,
60
Mestinon.
Milligrams.
Yeah, Mestinon is something that builds up acetylcholine, which is a neurotransmitter. Myasthenia gravis is it's a neuromuscular disease. It's an autoimmune condition that leads to skeletal muscle weakness. And so most commonly it affects the eyes, the face, causes an eye droop, drooping eyelids, sometimes difficulty talking. Mestinon, it's a classic treatment. It's been used for a really long time. Does it put people at higher risk? It doesn't appear to.
Okay.
And so it what this is
Jean
interesting.
Jean is wondering what she should be taking during the pandemic.
Yeah, I wish I could. I mean,
in this context,
it's a very, very specific kind of question. And I talked recently to a rheumatologist, Dr. Ailey Cohen, and that podcast will be posted soon. And I asked her, among your patients who have autoimmune conditions, I said, their immunity is messed up. And have you seen them being at higher risk for coronavirus complications? And because we might anticipate that those people would be very vulnerable because they have screwy immune systems. And her answer was, you know, so far we haven't seen that. So people with lupus and rheumatoid arthritis, even patients who are on powerful immunosuppressive medications, she has not seen, nor has it been reported, that those people are extraordinarily likely to get very sick or be hospitalized or die of coronavirus. They might get coronavirus, but they don't seem to be any worse off than other people. So I think the doctor's answer is correct. Do I, you know, would, is there any additional things that she should be taking other than what other people are taking for this? You know, like vitamin D and quercetin and resveratrol and things like elderberry and astragalus. I don't think it would be bad to take vitamin D.
Vitamin C. Vitamin D would help the myasthenia gravis as well.
Since it's autoimmune, on that principle, I don't know. I don't know. It's a very special case.
Okay. All right.
I mean, I might have to look at, you know, that person's levels of nutrients, see what's going on.
It's a consult.
It's a consult.
Gene, this may be a consult, We hope you feel better.
Yeah, but it's an interesting question.
I think this is another good time.
This is great. Thank you for prompting me. You know, I don't want to give short shrift to our great sponsors. And I was just telling, you know, apropos of that, I was just saying to, you know, we did a podcast with our CBD guy, Stuart Tomk from CV Sciences. And I said this to, with, in all sincerity, I said, you know, I want to thank you for sponsoring the show. And I, you know, I love your products. I use them personally. I prescribe them to patients. And the nice thing about it is, and not to diminish, you know, it's like saying you're my favorite kid, you know, of all the kids, you know, I love all my kids, but you're my favorite kid. I love all our sponsors and the products that, we talk about, you know, I'm full four square behind, and I just think that they're great, and I want to thank them for helping to support our enterprise here on Intelligent Medicine. So here goes. Listen up. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with one of my personal solutions to better cardiovascular health, Berkeley Life Nitric Oxide Support Supplements. Just two capsules of Berkeley Life daily provide the dietary nitrate equivalent of 7 ounces of beets and can support cardiovascular health, maintain healthy blood pressure levels, and improve overall circulation. For more information and to purchase, just go to drhoffman.com/berkeleylife. drhoffman.com/berkeleylife. Berkeley Life Nitric Oxide Support Supplements. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen Pro. We stress our bodies all the time at the cellular level with overeating, lack of sleep, and lack of exercise. These stressors damage our cells, depleting a vital coenzyme for cellular health called NAD. True Niagen Pro is clinically proven to increase NAD, which supports your cellular resilience and energizes your cells to help maintain your cellular health. True Niagen Pro, cellular defense for life. For more information and to purchase, go to drhoffman.com/TrueNiagenPro. That's True, T-R-U, drhoffman.com/TrueNiagenPro. Thanks for listening. And now back to our questions.
Okay.
We have one. What's next?
We have one from Paul. I have atrial fibrillation, and it's been under control with a blood thinner and verapamil. I also take collagen tablets daily for arthritis, but I was told that collagen exacerbated AFib. Is this true?
I wonder who said that. You know, was it mischievous cardiologist? You know,
oh, possibly.
Yeah, you know, it's like
a little mischievous cardiologist
putting a little bit of you know, coronavirus in the well.
Oh,
you know,
no.
It's called poisoning the well.
Right.
There is no basis for believing that collagen in any way, shape, or form has any impact, either positive or negative, on atrial fibrillation.
And
how might it do that? How might collagen, I mean, there's some collagen in the heart.
Yeah.
And, you know, one could argue falsely that if you take collagen, you might support the collagen in your heart. I guess.
Well, what if you eat lots of chicken soup? Are we talking about the same exacerbation of AFib? I can't see that. I don't see that.
Chicken soup is good for everything.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it is. And there's plenty of collagen in there, too.
And, oh, by the way, you know, because of the lockdown, you know, I didn't have time when I was working. But now, you know, I got a lot of time on my hands.
Yep.
So now, whenever I get a chicken, I carefully put the carcass and the bones into the crock pot. And, you know, in a couple of days, I've got wonderful chicken broth. So I'm getting, I get my money's worth out of every chicken that I buy.
There you go. And you make the most of all of that, and it makes an incredible soup. It really, really does.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. You know, AFib, in my estimation, Dr. Hoffman, and what I've read about AFib, it's more like a lifestyle thing. It could be exacerbated by lows in blood sugar. It could be exacerbated by overindulging in alcohol, with a poor diet.
Yes. Yep.
And things like that, things that can, you know, people who don't exercise, or they don't exercise enough, or they're very sedentary. And, you know, now with the lockdown, people are making jokes about, you know, in 20 years, we're going to have people who are homeschooled by day drinkers. That's the latest post I see coming over the waves as far as, you know, levity and everything. Well, we're all, you know, reading all this kind of nonsense.
But, if you weren't drinking before, it might drive you to drink. But I got to tell you that I had all during this whole time, I don't think I've had any alcohol because the
good
way
for
I
you.
Well, not even good. You know, it's not even. I don't go out of my way. It's just that I like to. I mean, I used to have like a little cocktail, you know, at the end of the day when I came home. It was to be like a little circuit breaker for me. But I don't do that anymore. I drink socially, so someone says, you know, here's some, you know, some wine, or, you know, here's a cocktail. Let's share.
Here's a margarita.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, Cinco de Mayo. I might have, you know, gone to a Mexican restaurant or something. Although I'm not a really foodie, I'm just not having it. And so I'm having a virtually alcohol-free coronavirus experience. And, you know, I actually think that may be advantageous because, you know, contrary to the belief that, you know, if alcohol sterilizes the coronavirus, is drinking a lot of alcohol is going to, it's kind of like the idea of like, Clorox, you know, let's drink it.
Oh, no.
Wait, did I just say that? Uh-oh. Okay.
Oh, no.
Don't try this at home, kiddies.
Yeah. So back to the AFib, taking collagen for arthritis is fine, making chicken soup, all of that kind of thing. But taking collagen would not exacerbate atrial fibrillation.
Bottom line.
Yeah. And you know what?
When people say stuff like that, I've heard, you know, give me an attribution. Better yet, give me an article. Give me an article. You know, then I'll look at it. I'll consider it. But, you know, and especially if some, you know, mischievous doctor, you know, because of their bias against supplements, threw that out at you.
Right.
The answer is, okay, doctor, can you give me a scientific reference? I'm an intelligent person. No, I didn't go to medical school, but, you know, I know how to read an article or a study. Can give me a reference? It's like, are you just shooting from the hip?
So, and AFib, all right. I'm assuming here the cardiologist put him on the blood thinner, the verapamil. Did Paul get any information about diet and lifestyle? Was he referred to a qualified nutritionist to follow up on that extremely important aspect of what may be underlying the AFib?
There's no cure for AFib, only medicine.
Yeah.
That's the approach, right?
That's the approach, So, all right. Paul, thank you for that question. We hope you feel better soon. Take your collagen. It's all right. We've got a question from Brad. Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. For overall health, which form of flaxseed is more beneficial to take? Whole flaxseed, ground flaxseed, or flaxseed oil? Thank you for such a great show.
Well, We could certainly discriminate between flaxseed oil and flaxseed, because flaxseed oil has more of the oil. It has, I mean, it's mostly alpha-linolenic acid, which is a vegetarian precursor to EPA and DHA. But
the body, but it doesn't convert well.
It doesn't convert well. And it depends on your genes. There's some people who make that conversion well and some people who don't make it hardly at all. So that's, unless you can get what's called lignin-rich flax oil, which has kind of a sludge in it. You have to shake it up really well to get the lignans.
You could eat the ground flax and get the lignans that way.
Right, exactly. And that's the benefit
fiber.
Because you're going to get less oil, but you're going to get the lignans in the flax seed. Now, how do you prefer your flax seed, Layla? Do you prefer to get the whole seeds or do you prefer to get it ground?
I could go either or. And flax, quite honestly, is not anything I use much or anything. I might sprinkle it on something from time to time. But no, I don't take flax oil. I'll take fish oil.
Why not?
But not flax oil.
Oh, because you want the actual EPA DHA.
I want the actual EPA DHA. I don't find that the conversion is there isn't enough there. It wouldn't be potent enough.
What about the lignans for breast health and for cardiovascular health and
for breast health, all of that?
Female hormones.
Yeah. Now, for people who have hypothyroidism, they want to be careful with flax because more than 2 tablespoons a day may be goitrogenic. Maybe.
Oh, really?
Maybe. So that might be something.
I actually threw some ground flax into, I made some pancakes this morning with eggs and coconut and almond flour. And but I threw some flaxseed in it. So it made it more like whole wheat pancakes because it darkens it and it makes it a little more fibrous. Mm-hmm. So the question was, do you prefer whole flax seeds to ground flax seeds? I prefer the ground flax seeds unless you go through the process of grinding them yourself.
In your own little spice mill, the same.
I think it's important when you're getting flax to get it in a vacuum-sealed container.
Yeah.
And then once it's open, I really put it in the freezer because I want it to – it gets stale very quickly. Those polyunsaturated oils in it are very susceptible to rancidity.
Yeah, like any seeds, sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, flax seeds, all of those.
But once you crack the seeds, it makes
them in the freezer is a much better idea.
Yeah, once you crack the seeds, you know, you grind the seeds, it exposes them to air and makes them much more vulnerable to the rancidity. So, you know, I try to get, fresh, not huge quantities. I get them in a vacuum-sealed container. They're ground. Because just the whole flax seeds, you have to chew them up.
You do. Yeah. Because they're small enough that if you don't chew well, you may not be getting the nutritional benefit if you're not completely grinding them via chewing.
Right.
Via mastication. So.
But I also, one way that I consume them too is if I make, if I want a little fruit, you know, either fresh organic fruit or these days, you know, frozen fruit, I'll make a little fruit bowl. I'll put some coconut milk on top or sometimes I'll use a macadamia milk or something like that. And then I'll put some fresh ground flax seeds on top. That's my, that's my sprinkle.
It's your sprinkles on your ice cream cone. Yes.
Right.
My sprinkle is
flaxseed.
That's a nice treat.
Or maybe some chopped almonds or something, or chopped walnuts or something. We can be imaginative even during the lockdown and, have fun stuff. Just have to, try and stay on the healthier ingredient side. So, unfortunately, that's all the time that we have for this week's Q&A with Layla. Do you have anything to add?
That would be it, Dr. Hoffman. Yeah.
All right.
So,
well,
thank you for that question. Thank you for all of your questions. Remember to email to radioprogram@AOL.com.
Yeah, that's the destination for questions, and we'll accept questions about coronavirus. We'll accept questions about all and sundry, because medical stuff keeps happening, even amidst the lockdown.
Yeah.
So hope that you and your family are safe and secure and not experiencing too much in the way of hardship, boredom, loneliness, impatience, or economic consequences of this, because we got to dig ourselves out of a bit of a hole, and that process is about to begin. So something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.